Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to, and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting, or do I wait for the next one, like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must-listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia, and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism. And he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Our story today takes place on the west coast of Finland. January 5, 2017 was a sunny winter day, and it was also very cold, negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is negative 20 degrees Celsius. That day, there was a woman who was at home, but outside, and she was looking west, out over the Gulf of Bothnia. That's the body of water that separates Finland's west coast from Sweden's east coast. It's about 60 or 70 miles across, and the surface is frozen in the winter.
As she's looking out over that ice-covered body of water, she sees a person skiing across the ice, about 500 yards away from land. And during that brief time she's looking that direction, she sees that person drop right through the ice into the water. The person she saw go through the ice was an 18-year-old man named Matt. That was a pretty scary day for Matt. He could have died that day, but he didn't. Thankfully, he survived, and he told me exactly what happened on that day. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Matt. Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for having me.
Now, you live in Finland, right? On the west coast of Finland.
Yeah.
And the area, you told me the area where you live is called the Kvarken area. Did I say that right?
Yeah, the stretch of water that connects Sweden and Finland is called Kvarken.
Okay, I could never say it like that, but as the American, I'll just say Kvarken. Right?
Yeah. Good enough.
Okay. How cold does it usually get there in the wintertime?
In Fahrenheit, it usually gets around to -4. I mean, obviously, some days it can be much colder, but around -4, a typical January.
So this body of water that separates Finland's west coast and Sweden's east coast is it's called the Gulf of Bothnia. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And it looks like, how far across is that? Is it like 100 kilometers roughly, maybe?
Around 100 kilometers.
So about 60 or 70 miles, something like that. So that's a big body of water. Does it freeze all the way across usually?
Yeah, some winters it's so cold that it'll actually freeze all the way across.
So you could, if someone wanted to, during some winters, you could walk all the way across from Finland to Sweden.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Have you ever done that?
No. That'd be rather difficult, I believe.
Yeah, it probably would. Being out there in the cold with no shelter or anything. How many times before this day had you skied on that ice?
Several times per week, every winter, all winter.
So you're pretty much an outdoor guy. You love being outdoors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love being outdoors.
Had you been on that same ice that winter previous to when this happened?
Yeah, I'd been on the ice a couple of times actually prior to this and had no problems whatsoever.
How do you know when you're skiing, how do you recognize it when you're coming up on a weak area? Or is there a way to recognize it?
Well, if there are parts of the ice that are not covered in snow and they're actually exposed to the eye, then you might be able to spot some major cracks or something like that. But I guess just keep your eyes and ears open and make sure nothing seems too fishy.
So you're not looking really for big holes in the ice. You're mainly looking for cracks in the ice. Is that right?
Yeah. If I'm worried it's going to break, I'm looking for cracks. But normally there's not a chance it's going to break. So I'm usually not too worried about it.
Yeah. So it's not. Yeah. This was in January. So it had already been cold for a while. So really it should have been thick enough.
Yeah, it should have been thick enough.
All right. So when you're skiing, what you're really doing, as the way I think of it, is you're cross country skiing, right? Just like you would on land.
Yes.
Can you describe when you stepped out on the ice that day? What does your equipment look like? I mean, what kind of gear did you have?
Well, in general, I tend to carry light gear, like nothing too heavy. Obviously can get quite difficult and strenuous on your body if you have lots of thick clothing, but also if you end up breaking through the ice, you're not pulled down too much by the heavy clothing. But I guess I didn't have too much cargo with me. I had my phone and I had a backpack with some water and stuff, but not too much.
That's one of the things I was going to ask you is, do you normally carry your phone with you? But
yeah.
Probably most people do. But really, if you're down in the water, your phone might not be workable anyway.
No, it's unless you have some sort of waterproof casing. It's
right.
Basically goodbye for that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this, what we're talking about, this event, happened on Thursday, January 5 of 2017. So it's almost 2 years ago. On that day, how far out did you go from land?
I actually didn't go too far. I think I skied about 3 or 4 miles, something like that. Nothing too harsh at all.
That's still quite a ways, though. I mean, you're way off from land, though. 3 or 4 miles is...
I'm not heading straight across the ice.
Oh,
I'm like kind of in an inlet where I live, a small inlet that's about like 10 miles long or something like that. And I'm heading along land, like out towards the ocean, but I haven't really got to the open ocean yet.
Okay. So you would go out a little ways and then head north or head south?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'd do.
Okay. What was your first indication that there might be a problem?
Well, I started to hear these very, very slight cracking noises, or it was more like a crackling noise, but it could easily be mistaken for like the snow underneath the skis. So I really wasn't too suspicious because it is crunching just like snow. But then eventually it just like everything broke at once, like a large sheet of ice just like slowly sunk down into the water.
Oh, so it was fairly quick, but it wasn't all of a sudden you went through. You could kind of see it happening.
Yeah, it happened over the course of like maybe a second.
Oh, well, that is pretty quick then. Wow.
Second, 2 seconds, something like that.
Okay. So when that happened, did you just go completely in the water at that point?
There really wasn't anything I could do because I guess the area that was breaking was like too large for me to like kind of get away from. So yeah, I panicked and I went straight into the water. My head never went under the water, thankfully, though.
So you were mostly under the water. Do you know what the temperature of the water was that day?
I never got that checked, but I knew that the air was -4 degrees Fahrenheit, so I guess the water couldn't have been too pleasant.
No, I wouldn't imagine. And that's got to be, that's worse than taking a cold shower. That's got to be quite a shock, not just knowing that you're going in, but the feel of sudden freezing water being submerged.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You get the whole adrenaline rush going.
Right. A lot of things happening at once. How did you keep your head above the water?
I was just treading water, I guess. For some reason, I thought I was going to end up under the water, but I just was able to tread and float by and keep my head dry.
And did you still have your skis on?
Actually, the first thing I did when I had plummeted was take my skis off because I knew there's not a chance of getting out with them on. So I kind of pulled them off and threw them up onto the surface.
Oh, okay. So you didn't just kick them off and let them sink to the bottom. You wanted to save them, right?
Yeah, of course. They're new.
Okay. So your skis were off and you were able to just tread water. Do you know how to swim?
Yeah. Yeah, I know how to swim. So I guess the drowning wasn't as dangerous as freezing in this situation for me, at least.
So you're able to tread water. And so at that point, what's going through your mind?
Well, first of all, I guess you never expect these things to happen to you. So when it does, you get kind of confused. It feels unreal in a way. But I guess once I came to my senses, the first thing I thought was I need to get out of this situation quick because the longer I wait, the colder I'll get, the more difficult it'll be, the more stamina I'll end up spending. So all I knew was I need to get out of this situation like right away.
And how were you trying to get out? I mean, did you have your arms up on the edge of the ice trying to pull yourself up, or were you not able to grab onto any ice at all?
Well, I was trying to swing my legs up. I had my arms up on the surface. I was trying to swing my legs up because that is usually a good strategy if the ice is strong that you're surrounded by. But in this point, or in this case, it's very, very thin. Ice is about like half an inch maybe. It wasn't thick at all. So every time I tried to swing my legs up, I was just breaking off the sides of the hole. So the hole is just getting larger and larger and larger as I was trying to get up. When I didn't realize that that was working, I developed a new strategy, which was basically just using my arms and crawling straight forwards up against the ledge, which really just, it kept breaking off over and over again.
So how many times do you think that happened while you were trying to get out?
Definitely a lot of times, because I was out there for about 7 minutes, I think. So I was at it pretty much the whole time.
Would you describe yourself as being in a kind of a state of panic, or were you thinking kind of clearly?
I don't know. It's kind of both at the same time, because you get like these primal instincts that kick in and you have the adrenaline rushing and everything. So I guess you might be quite panicked, but still your body for some reason knows what to do.
Had you ever been in any kind of situation like this before? Any kind of training for this?
No, like I have done ice swimming before, which is a thing here where you just cut a hole in the ice and jump in. I've done that before. So I guess it wasn't too cold for me to handle, is what I'm trying to say.
And if you, like, looking back on it now, how long do you think you could have stayed in the water before hypothermia would set in?
I really do not know. I do not know, because I wasn't there for 7 minutes. And I know that by the time they checked my temperature afterwards, I did have hypothermia, but I do not know if I reached that temperature in the water or if it happened while transporting me out of the danger zone.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%. So I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great. And I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25WHAT to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. code 25WHAT.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
Did you, at any point during this, did you kind of think in your head, well, this is the end. This is how I die.
Yeah, definitely. Because I guess what separates this incident from other people's near-death experiences is that when you break through the ice or you're drowning or anything like that, it's a very slow, long experience. So you have time to think about all the possible outcomes of this situation. So yeah, that was definitely a thought on my mind. Like, is this it, you know?
And this whole time when you're trying to get out, you're also yelling for help.
Yeah, I was yelling as loud as I possibly could. Like, I could barely talk for a week after that because I'd pretty much screamed my throat out.
How far do you think you were from the nearest house or where someone might hear you?
Well, I was skiing parallel to land, so I wasn't too far away, but I mean, the nearest house was at least 500 yards, something like that.
Okay.
Or felt like that at least, but it was quite far away, the nearest house. But thankfully, a woman who was there had seen me crash through the ice. And so she sent her son actually to run out there and try to save me. So that did take some time. But I also heard that people across the ice on the other side, they had heard me at least a mile away.
You didn't even realize it when you're trying to scramble and somehow get out. There was this woman who had seen you go through. She just happened to be looking at you when you went through the ice.
Yeah. And I had no way of knowing that. So I thought I was all alone.
Yeah. How did her son get out there safely? Or was he endangering his own life to get to you?
Yeah, he was definitely endangering his own life to get to me because he had to kind of maneuver around the thin zone because there's a thick ice and a very thin ice, like right next to each other. So he had to kind of like maneuver around that area to get to me.
You know, a lot of times you hear about somebody sees a person drowning and they jump in to save that person, and then both of them end up drowning. So I wonder if that thought perhaps went through this guy's mind. How old was her son, or roughly?
He's in his 30s, 40s, something like that.
Okay. So did he ski out to you, or did he just run out?
He had a kick sled. It's like this. Kind of like, it's like a sleigh with a seat on it. So basically he's running with the sleigh in front of him on his way out. He stopped at the point where the ice got weaker because at this point you could kind of see because the thin ice had started sinking and sogging, so it's a bit darker. So he biked, or he ran out there. He was about 20, 30 yards away from me, and he threw a rope out to me. And yeah. Basically, I just grabbed the rope and he pulled me up, and the ice like kept like being crushed underneath me as I was being pulled up. So I got these skin cuts like on my wrists because of it.
Yeah, because he's pulling you in the direction of the surface. How many times did he have to throw the rope before you got it?
Only once, actually.
Oh, that's good. When you grabbed the rope and when you finally got pulled to the surface, how far away were you from him at that point?
I guess I'd say about 10 yards, something like that.
And obviously where he was still safe ice.
Yeah.
So he could just, once you're on the surface, he could just pull you probably without too much effort because you're just sliding on ice, just pull you over to him.
Yeah, exactly.
So did he then take you back to his house?
Yeah, so he put me on the sled, and he pushed me over to his house, went inside. They called an ambulance because I was probably going to get hypothermia, and they laid me to rest on a couch and gave me a quilt to stay warm underneath. And yeah, they just called my parents after that.
And where were your parents? Were they at home during this time?
My dad was at work. My mom was at home.
That's not the kind of phone call a mom or a dad wants to get, of course.
No, apparently not.
Of course, by that time, the news was good because you had been rescued.
Yeah.
So what was your medical condition at that time then? Were you hypothermic then?
Yeah, that's correct. What happened was I didn't really notice I was freezing too much as I was being pushed towards his house. Like my clothes were freezing. Like I could barely move my arms because like the ice froze in my jacket. And it didn't feel too bad at that point because I had lots of adrenaline. But it was really once I like laid on the couch with the blanket that I really started to freeze.
Wow. So you were back in the warmer environment, and that's when you started to feel the real effect of the cold?
Yeah. I hadn't really felt it until then.
And so did you end up going to the hospital?
Yeah, they drove me to the hospital because my body temperature had gone under 94, 95 degrees Fahrenheit. I think that's that's where it starts to officially count as hypothermia. So they drove me to the hospital, kept me warm in the ambulance. When I got to the hospital, the local news had like actually written an article about me already. So that's kind of weird.
Wow. That's some, must have been a slow news day or something, right? Somebody waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
So the people in your town, everyone knew what had happened and what you had just gone through?
Yeah, everyone pretty much knew right away. I got lots of messages from people and stuff like that.
So you're kind of a celebrity for a little while.
Yeah, 15 minutes of shame.
looking back on this now, is there something you could have done or signs you could have seen to avoid having this happen?
I really thought about that a lot. But I mean, in general, what I was doing wasn't dangerous because usually even that part of the ice is thick. But what had happened was the ice had been real nice and strong for several weeks. But the night before I had gone out, there had been this like real strong windstorm that had broken off like a very large section of ice from this inlet I was skiing in, and had to kind of like the wind had pushed it across the ocean basically. So the only ice I was skiing on was the ice that had frozen overnight. So that's why it suddenly got so thin. But I guess as a safety precaution, I could have like checked with my dad or with someone else if they knew anything about the conditions, what the ice is like, or I guess I could have checked the weather history from yesterday or something like that.
Are there people, are there organizations or weather groups or something that kind of monitor the condition of ice in various areas?
Yeah, but not too actively.
Okay. All right. Would it have made a difference if you were with someone rather than being all by yourself out there?
Had I been with someone? It really depends on how tightly they'd be following me, because I guess if two people would have skied out there beside each other, the same thing would have happened and they would have both been doomed. But I guess if one person heads a few feet ahead of the other one, then second person could save the first person if anything goes down.
You know, this happened almost 2 years ago, and I understand it's taken you a while before you could actually talk about it.
Yeah.
Why is that? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I guess before you're able to actually like mature your view on the whole situation, you have to go through a whole process where you stop worrying about it, where you stop theorizing and imagining different possible outcomes of the situation that didn't really happen. But, you know, you start to think about all the different outcomes, and I guess that can get quite scary.
Yeah, like if that lady hadn't been out and happened to be looking at you when you went through. Now, you said there was someone else that heard you yelling, but they were like a mile away. That's a long way for sound to travel.
Yeah, they were in this village that's like across the inlet. And I remember my dad had told me afterwards that they could hear me from there. And they had also been able to spot me with binoculars at that point. But I guess sound just travels real well across water.
But if they had been the only ones to hear you, that it would have taken them quite a bit longer to get to you than it would for this man to get to
you. Yeah, right. It would have taken way longer for them.
All right. And that may have been too late.
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking? It might be good if you, maybe you've already done this, if you told your story at some local groups or clubs or something, you know, people that are interested in the outdoors, that, you know, so people might be more aware of this. It might save somebody else's life. Have you thought about that at all?
Well, I haven't really done it at any clubs, but I guess I have like talked to people about it and like kind of advocated ice safety, like look for the obvious giveaways and I don't know, take the proper safety precautions before you do anything like that.
Has this happen, has it changed your outlook on life in any way?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I suppose death seems a bit more spontaneous because like you expect it to happen a lot further down along the way.
How old are you?
I'm 20 at the moment. I was 18 then.
Yeah. You don't at 20 years old or at 18 years old, you don't really think about death really at all, no. Right?
No. Just any regular morning.
Have you, since this happened, have you gotten to know that man that came out and saved your life?
Well, I was familiar with him from before. I kind of knew his family, know who he is.
Okay.
Yeah. We live in an area where lots of people know each other.
He might be one of the guys you want to buy a beer sometime or something.
Yeah, definitely. I set up like kind of a, or I gave them a card where I like basically thanked them for saving me, his mom and him. And I gave them a gift card to a restaurant.
That's nice. Are you planning to go out on the ice again this winter?
Yeah, I probably will this winter. Like I wasn't able to do it too much last winter because I was in the military, which all men in Finland have to do as a conscript. So I wasn't at home too much last winter, but I'm definitely planning on going out on ice this winter.
If you weren't tied up with the military last winter, would you have done it then? Or did you have any hesitation about going back out on it because of what happened?
Not really. Like I have been out on the ice, like not as far obviously as that time, but I have been like out walking with my dog on the ice as an example.
Yeah, if you love the outdoors, it's kind of hard to not do outdoor stuff, right?
Yeah.
Matt, what a great story. I mean, obviously things could have turned out completely differently, but I'm glad it turned out the way it did. Thanks for sharing your story.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode. My goal for each show is to introduce you to people and stories that you just won't find on other podcasts. If you want to help support the show, you just need to subscribe, and that way you'll never miss an episode. You can click on any of the subscribe buttons on the website, which is whatwasthatlike.com. You'll see all the links right there at the top where you can subscribe directly to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, or on whatever app you use to catch your podcasts. And you'll see there are also links to Twitter and Instagram, so you can follow us there, and I hope you do. And if you really want to connect with me and get in on the discussion with other listeners to this show, you can join our private Facebook group. You can find that at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook.
And of course, you can always email me directly at scott@whatwasthatlike.com or just go to the website and click on contact. I'd love to hear what you think of this episode or a previous episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next show where we'll once again ask the question, what was that like?